Yep.
Okay, welcome aboard. All right, we're going to call a meeting to order, and at this time, we will stand for a moment of silence, and then we will pledge the flag to my left. Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, it's good to see a big crowd here tonight, considering that it's summertime. It feels like summertime in this world. Yeah, school's over, so yay for those of you. Have a nice long summer vacation. At this time, then, we'll open it up for citizens of the district. Anybody that wanted to address the school board this evening? You would come to the microphone and state your name, where you reside, and then you have the floor.
Okay, my name is Aaron Hoffman. I live at Garden Spot Village in New Holland. I just want to thank you all for what you do in giving direction to the work that's at hand, and I'd just like to say thank you. Father in heaven, we thank you for these people who give of themselves and for the supporting staff that they have. We thank you for the schools in this area, and we ask for your direction and protection for the children. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. And were there any others this evening? Okay, then we'll move into Dr. Hollister has a special presentation.
I sure do. I am very pleased to share with you in person members of the Be Impactful Committee, as well as the teachers who were selected by that committee this year for the Be Impactful Award. I'll ask those folks to talk about that in just a moment, but I would like to do some introductions. First, Mrs. Jamie Davis. Jamie, give us a little wave, or I don't make you stand up. This was her idea, and I so welcome it as a superintendent. She's personally funding the award as well. She can talk a little bit more about that in honor of a very important mentor to her from many years ago. I guess I shouldn't say she's solely funding that. Her husband is right next to her. Somehow they share that. I'm not going to kind of ask how that works. But the two of them are here for that purpose. And, of course, I have to introduce Mrs. Angela Landis. Just a little wave up front there, Angela. She is absolutely worthy of this award. We're so proud of her. Angela, we thought was going to get away a couple years ago. To be a full-time mom and missed, she wanted more kids, I guess. And said, Dr. Hollister, do you think you could take me back? And I went and picked her up and brought her out. But I was like, how soon can you start? So she has been awesome in the classroom, just amazing. So if you ever get an opportunity, I will walk in there with you and we can check out what's going on. So. That's the award. Well, I have the floor. I do want to introduce a few other people who are important behind the scenes folks. All the way on the end there, Lucinda Hottenstein. These are members of our foundation. There's no connection other than we know each other from that foundation. But this is the Spartan Foundation for Education, the global education stuff. Lucinda sits on that board, as does Dennis Wilson on this side. Dennis is another valuable member, two very valuable members, along with Jamie Davis. The three of them are all members of that foundation. And, of course, board member Mayo is a part of that as well. I know, Dennis, your wife is here, and I know she's a staple at Blue Ball. Mrs. Wilson, I'm sorry, I don't know your first name.
Jessica,
that's right. I should know that. Thank you. I know you introduced yourself. So Jessica is here, and so I'd like to say thanks to her, too, because I know we've got a lot of volunteer hours going on, girls in the room, a bunch of other things at Blue Ball. So thank you all. And at this point, I will stop talking and turn it over to you, Jamie.
Thank you. As Dr. Hollister shared, this award is named after Mr. B, who was a tremendous mentor to me. He was someone that made people believe in themselves, and he really believed in them before they believed in themselves. He was many things. He was a husband, a father of four beautiful girls, a coach, a boss, a friend. He was also a teacher once upon a time, a social studies teacher. And by the time I knew him, he was a lawyer, but he never stopped teaching. Just everyday life became his classroom. He didn't actually go to the school every day. many life lessons I learned from him that I still carry with me today, like building people up, never tear them down, help people without the need for recognition, have an opinion and share it, and the list could go on. One quick story I'll share is just an example of how he taught us these beautiful life lessons. I was an intern at his law office, and I was doing one of my very important intern duties, which was filing, and there was this beautiful blue and white vase that sat on top of one of the filing cabinets. And still to this day, I'm not sure how it happened, but that vase fell to the ground, and it broke. It didn't just break into two pieces, it actually shattered into hundreds of pieces. I was devastated, as was he. I, in the next few days, learned that that vase was actually very important to him. He had bought it on a business trip to China, and he carried that vase on his lap the entire plane ride home, so it didn't break, and I broke it. So we both did get over that, but fast forward years later, and I had just had my first child, my daughter Samantha, who, again, first child, Mr. B and his family came to visit with a gift bag in tow, and when I opened up that gift bag, there was that beautiful blue and white vase. He had glued every single piece back together. And there was a note on the bottom of that vase that said, and I'm paraphrasing, accidents will happen. Remember what's important. I will tell you now, with four children, three boys, lacrosse balls and hockey pucks flying around the house at all times, it's a very important life lesson to remember every day. Another question that's come up over the about the award over the last few weeks is, what is the criteria for the award? And I'm sorry, this is an emotional one for me. I just told it at the start, so I'm going to try and hold this together. We really wanted to keep the award simple. So the award is to recognize someone that's had a tremendous impact, because that's what Mr. B did every day. And it is my wish that our students here at Elanco have someone that has that same impact on them. Our winner this year is Angela Landis, a first grade teacher at Blue Ball Elementary, as Dr. Hollister shared. Her nomination stood out of the almost 200 nominations that we received this year. Not just for the impact on our students, which we were able to see last week when we visited her in her classroom, but also the impact she's had on their families and also on her coworkers. Her nominator spoke of the impact that she has on those students and how she makes each student have fun while learning. And it also talked about the impact she has on her coworkers, making each of them better, just being her. In hearing the response since we announced Angela's winning last week, it's clear that we made the right decision. Angela, thank you for all that you do for our students, their families, and your peers. And congratulations on the award.
You undercut me a little bit. I did want to mention that Melissa Jones is also here as a regular feature at the Blue Ball Elementary School and also in Angela's class. So thank you, Mrs. Jones. I cannot express my gratitude enough. It's nice that sort of an outside group sort of gives an objective view. It's incredible. 200 applications. For you to sort through all that did not just happen in an hour. And I think everyone needs to recognize that, because they did share with me sort of their top group, and they did a great job picking that top group. So clearly they spent time, and folks who nominated teachers spent time. So there's really a lot of caring here, and I can't thank the group enough for their work. And certainly, Angela, you two, you are not allowed to spend that money in your classroom. Several teachers emailed me. She's already planning to spend the money in the classroom. That is your money for your family. Many, many hours that you spend doing things for our kids here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I did get really excited about some potential purchases in the room. And some things that I've been putting off, and I did get shot down immediately by all of my colleagues.
Thanks a lot for that.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. Let me hear that for a second.
Oh, yeah.
I think that the Davis family should definitely be commended for stepping out in that manner. I couldn't hear some of the other comments, and I'm sure that they echoed that, but to take that outside perspective and to really show the extra effort, especially the way that they funded it personally here initially, it's pretty commendable.
Yes, thanks for those comments. All right. We have, then we'll move on. We do have a personnel report this evening that we will need to approve. Hopefully, everyone had a chance to take a look at that. Were there any comments regarding the personnel report?
Yeah, Mr. President, I do have one comment. I know we have some other teachers, some new teachers to introduce. I wanted to talk just briefly. It's in my action items portion of the portion of the agenda, lower on the agenda. But Heather Trance is here. Heather, if you don't, please stand up. I think everybody knows who you are, just in case. Heather spent a lot of time with us. We are thrilled to make her position technically full-time. She's been working more than full-time as it's been, but we are going to bring her on. If you recall, last year we were going to try this for a year to see how it goes. She is an assistant principal at the elementary level, primarily shared between this coming year will be between Blue Fall and New Holland, where our largest numbers are and where our greatest need is. We are, I should also say, thrilled with her performance, obviously, or we wouldn't be moving this to a sort of a full-time position. So I want to thank Heather for the effort this year and congratulate you publicly for the service that you will provide and for joining our team. Any questions or comments?
Thumbs up is plenty.
Yes. Glenn, I'll need to recuse myself from this.
Okay, yes, Brian, who is a board member just virtually here tonight. He has a family member on the personnel report, so he recuses himself.
I would like to have Mr. Sanger start by introducing three people that are on his agenda or have been already hired, but we want to show you who they are, and then we'll go to Mrs. Martin, and then finally we'll end with Mr. Starr.
Good evening, thanks for having us tonight. I'd like to introduce some of our new staff members. Two of them unfortunately could not be here tonight, but I'll introduce them as well. Jim Moshos, if you can stand up for us. Jim is going to be teaching chemistry and physics for us. He is both chemistry and physics certified. So we're super excited to have him on board with us. He spent some time in industry, and now he's on the dark side and into the teaching realm. So we're lucky to have him. Excuse me, Kayla Bixler, if you don't mind standing up. Kayla is going to be taking over for Lindsay Hubert, who actually is taking on an instructional coaching position. She also teaches chemistry, and we are super excited to have her as well. And then finally, with us tonight is Katie Andrews. Katie's one of my former LS folks from back in the day. But now we got her on board here. She's a phenomenal young lady. She's going to be teaching the ag science for us. She's taking over for Heather Pearl. Two other members that could not be here tonight, Jesse McBride. He unfortunately is on, well, unfortunately for us, fortunately for him, he's on vacation. He's going to be our new English teacher taking over for Michelle Custer. And then also Cody Stoneback is going to be our new tech ed teacher, and that is a repurposed position from English from last year. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I would like to introduce you to Danielle Truitt. Danielle's joining us and is just shy of her fourth year of teaching from the local IU 13. Danielle will be joining us at New Holland Elementary in Autistic Supports. So, welcome, Danielle. I'd also like to share, not present this evening, is Elizabeth, her last name is always tricky, Dahlia, and then Alyssa Lux. They will both be elementary emotional support. And we also have Heather Aldridge, who is filling in as a long-term substitute at New Holland, who will be middle school autistic support.
Good evening. It's my privilege to introduce Ms. Joanne Bailey. Joanne is our new middle school administrative assistant. If you recall, Diane Caswell has retired or will be retiring June 30th after 30 years of service to the district. And Joanne is going to be replacing actually Jennifer Meyer, who's going to be moving laterally into Diane's place. Joanne comes to us from the banking industry, and ironically enough, her and Jennifer Meyer were colleagues in the banking industry, and now will be reunited at Garden Spot Middle School. So that's going to be a pretty cool reunion. So.
And we have Dr. Winters also will be introducing somebody.
Very excited to introduce Lindsay Hubert in the back row. Lindsay is leaving the classroom. She was a chemistry teacher for us at the high school and is now going to be an instructional coach at the secondary level, and just couldn't be happier to have her in that capacity. And she was able to jump in here real quick from her show getting meeting, so we appreciate her being here and welcome her aboard. So we're very excited.
Thank you.
And I believe that's it for right now.
Yeah. All right. So what we'll need is a motion to approve.
So moved.
A second. Any other discussion or comments on the personnel report? All right. Then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is passed with one abstention. Okay. Very good. We will move into the report section then of our meeting. Property and services. Mr. Randy.
Thank you, Mr. President. We have several action items for next Monday night. The first one is the approval of the final budget for the general fund. The budget, as it is right now, includes a 2.29% tax increase, with the balance to be used from our fund balance to balance the budget, which therefore, 2017-18 millage rate would increase from 15.0404 to 15.383. The next action item is the resolution to actually set those rates. The only rate that's changing would be our real estate tax rate. Again, setting that rate at 15.384. The next action item that we'll have is the resolution for the Homestead Farmstead. I'm awaiting some final numbers from the county. We did receive an updated file the other week, but we're anticipating having the final file of the Homestead Farmstead's listing this week, so I'll have that in advance of next Monday so that I can get that resolution prepared for the board. Very minimal changes from what you saw previously. Moving into action item letter D, this is an annual action item. It's to authorize myself to make all the necessary budgetary transfers after the June 30th, 2017 year ends. As we prepare for our audit, there's costs that come in over the summer that would, in fact, necessitate doing some budgetary transfers to keep our balances from being in the negative. So I typically get that authorization, and then when you see the audit report, you'll see all the adjustments that were made. The next action item, again, this is a annual action item that we have each year. We're required to have a resolution adopted to commit our June 30th, 2017 fund balance for specific purposes. All this does is list the allowable commitments, which would be PEASRs, the use for technology purchases. Those are the two that we currently utilize and have money set aside for. And then there's also the any type of curriculum updates. We include all three of those, and then at final adoption, final audit, you will then see how those commitments are established.
So that would be at the end of the budget period, whatever the fall through, is that what you're talking about?
Correct, yeah. When we get closer to the end of the audit, I'll come back to you typically in the October time frame, share with you kind of where we are looking at ending up the year and if we want to make any adjustments to those commitments.
Okay. And I wasn't sure. This is a little bit off topic, but the sale of the Norman property, have we designated what
proceeds would go for, when do we have that?
We have not yet. My assumption would be that it would go in the cap reserve fund for future future projects and or land purchases if we ever can.
Should that be on the agenda for July? It looks like it would probably be
official. Yeah, if we were going to have settlement in July, then what I'll probably do is we'll have to have settlement when we get the funds coming to the board. So
okay. We can that, so it'll probably be August, I think.
Yeah. But as we get closer, you know, I'll let the board know in advance so that we can at least when we get the check, we can put the verification.
Okay.
What we can do is we can deposit in the general fund
general
and transfer
and then designate it later for
or transfer.
Can I just ask a question just to clarify? So is it just for the purchase of equipment and supplies? It's not for the purpose of personnel?
Correct. The for us, we typically look at it as the one-time purchases. So we would look at the technology piece and/or software and/or equipment. We typically see the staffing or personnel is more reoccurring. We try not to commit fund balance one-time monies for reoccurring pieces.
Keep in mind too, we would keep that money available if land would come up for sale that we think we should buy or need in the future. I know, for example, it's a large farm, but the large farm that's adjacent to Blue Ball Elementary School is most likely coming up for an auction in September, was the last I heard. So it might be something that we need to consider at that time. Not that we need that acreage, but as you all know, we've been landlocked before when we wanted to do projects. That could be a potential middle school site down the road if it would ever see growth. So this is long-term planning, something we want to keep an eye on. The other thing I want to mention to the board is the board asked us to keep back off the maximum allowable based on the index of 2.5%. Our index this year is 2.5%. Mr. Ramsey and the team have brought the budget down to 2.29. I think the last time we were talking about 2.2.
So, I was going to wait until you're finished to bring that. For some reason, 1.9 sticks in my mind, not 2.29. Does anybody remember that?
Years ago, maybe.
Moving on to our information items, I have two of them. One thing I just wanted to inform the board, we are looking at changing our health insurance provider, our third-party administrator. As you know, the Aetna was bought by Health America. We were served very well with Health America. Since the transition to Aetna, it has been far from easy. We continually have issues. Things that we were promised aren't happening. It's really a point of a small fish in a big pond. So much so that our representative that was with Health America for many, many years has left Aetna. She's seen the frustration as well. So we've met through our stout advisors or healthcare consultant. We met with CoreSource. We're very pleased with their abilities to administer self-insured plan documents. Aetna is a fully insured company. They try to take our plan document that we have written and try to force it, mold it into their fully insured plan. And with that has been a lot of challenges and issues. CoreSource is a true TPA. We will have extensive meetings with them based on the plan document. You know, what do you mean by this? What do you mean by that? So that they can administer appropriately. They will provide a lot more flexibility in us managing our plan, as well as additional offerings that we can roll out to the staff. The IU-13 has been with CoreSource for a number of years. I've talked with Flip, have a lot of respect for Flip and his staff. They are very pleased and very happy with their switch over to CoreSource. Not saying there's not going to be some issues in the conversion, but it's I feel bad for the staff as well as my staff. I mean, just the whole from the benefit. So it's time, and I feel really good about where we're going to go. So just wanted to give you guys that update. The last information item that I have. If you recall, there's an article in the paper about fund balances and tax increases. One of the things, it's amazing.
Pencil graphic.
This is my Vanna White.
Sorry.
Let me make it a little bit bigger. It is on the agenda if you want to, if you need to look at it. Hopefully we can make it a little bigger. Really what I wanted to kind of point out is, you know, you can make the numbers look any way you want. The way that the Lancaster newspaper kind of rolled out the article, you know, it makes us look like we had one of the highest tax increases since 2010-11. And, you know, that's okay if everybody started with the same common denominator in 2010-11. And everybody does not. So when you take a look at, and in the, I would say, light red or pink shaded area, that's the actual percentages from the Lancaster newspaper article. And you'll look at that and say, well, geez, East Lancaster County was one of the highest tax increases, and they're well above the average tax increase, if you will, which would be alarming to some individuals as well as myself. But what I try to boil it down to is where it truly means to the taxpayer and in their pocket. So, for example, when you take a look at the total mills, not just the percent increase, but where we were, where everybody was in 2010-11, and where are they now? How many mills did each district belong? And when you take a look at that, it gives you a whole different perspective on tax increases. Whereas when we were one of the highest, you know, we're now one of the lower in the average. When you take a look at the overall average, you know, 1.8 total millage increase, we're at 1.6. In the next column in the green area, when you look at the total dollar value of an assessed home of $100,000, how much more is that individual paying in each district? And when you take a look at our district, that individual's paying $160 more as compared to the average of 181. So it gives you a whole different perspective. And in my opinion, it gives you a better perspective of, if I were District A or District B, how much more have I paid since 2010-11, not just the percent increase. And then the yellow column is I then added 16-17, which the article didn't, and what you can see is the difference between the average in 15-16 for us, which is about $21 less than the average, it increases to almost $40. So I think when you take a look at that, I think you'll get a different perspective, a more accurate representation of the taxes. And I would also caution you as well when you take a look at the fund balances. Fund balances in 2010-11 aren't all the same. So if a district has a $10 million fund balance and they go up to $15 million, that looks like a 50% increase. But if you have a district that has, you know, a $5 million, it goes to $10, that's a 100% increase. So I think it's all relative based on the size and the baseline, the denominator, if you will, of the starting point. So just food for thought. I shared this with Dr. Hollister and Dr. Larkin, and they felt that it was worth sharing with the board and the community just to give a different perspective.
Yeah, I want to say I don't think Lancaster newspaper was intentionally trying to mislead anyone. I think it's just it borders on sloppy reporting, or maybe in order to make it or keep it simplistic so they could do the easy graphics, they didn't get into that level of detail, but that level of detail matters. So I asked Mr. Ramsey to update that article a little bit, and that's what we did.
I just have a question. How much out of our own fund are you considering contributing? So you said we were looking at 2.29 or 2.25 for a tax increase, and we were going to get the rest of our requirement out of our fund balance. So how much is that?
It's around, at this stage, about $700,000 is what we're looking. Hopefully, I mean, the state budget hasn't been finalized yet. We're fine-tuning some of the numbers. But we're hoping that can be adjusted down a little bit, but based on some of the numbers. But at this point, the budget calls about $700,000.
And keep in mind, the one wild card out there is the federal budget could be slashed. It could be for quite a long time. Who knows what's going to happen with that? That's
any other questions on property and services? Okay, well, hearing none, we'll move on into program committee. Dr. Blair?
Yes, we have two items that are information items on under program tonight, and they are curricular issues that you will have an ability to vote on in July. And I'm going to turn it over right now to Dr. Winters for the high school course.
Thank you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you guys about the courses. We have six new courses that we're going to seek approval for to run at the high school next year. The first is Philosophy 101. It's an honors level introductory course. It'll look at the history, development, and schools of thought in the field of philosophy as it's developed over time, looking at Greeks to present, looking to study concepts like truth and justice and knowledge, freedom in society, those kinds of things. It's going to be a research-based course. There's going to be a research project at the end that students will complete in the form of an academic paper. It's going to be an online course that's going to be built on Canvas. It's for students in grades 10 to 12, and there is a gifted IEP prerequisite to take the course. The second course is called Exploring Cross-Cultural American Literature, and this is a course that looks at the influence of prose and poetry across cultural divides in American history, specifically looking at the different lenses of human relationships, America's sense of promise, how you face life with laughter, fears, etc., all through the lens of poetry and prose and American literature. For people that are English folks like myself, we get excited about these kinds of courses. It focuses on more advanced writing skills. Again, it's another online course. It'll be in a Canvas format, grades 10 through 12. There's a gifted IEP prerequisite for that course as well. The reason for that with those two courses is we're looking at expanding and being a little bit more creative and some of the ways that we can meet the goals of students that have gifted IEPs. And being able to build courses online gives us one other avenue that we have to be able to try to meet the goals of individual students. The next course that I want to talk about is AP Seminar. This is a new advanced placement offering that we'll be seeking approval for next year. This is a course that really focuses on inquiry and reading and analyzing articles and research studies and just learning how to process and study research and what that means. Again, an analytical paper at the end, a lot of analyzing skills. It also adds to our catalog of advanced placement courses that we can offer in the high school, which is a plus when you think about school performance profile and having advanced offerings for students. Another AP course that we're going to offer next year is AP Computer Science A. This is kind of the second level course to the computer programming course that some of you will remember that you approved a couple of years ago. This course focuses on Java programming specifically. written expression, decoding, comprehension, fluencies, in terms of within the programming framework. It will count as a math credit, which will be great for students that have a desire to want to pursue a field in math. And it'll prepare students for the AP exam as well. The textbook for that course is Java Methods, Object-Oriented Programming and Data Structures. I will leave it with Dr. Larkin. If any of you would like to look at it in the interim, you're welcome to. Might be for some interesting reading, I don't know.
Where's the philosophy?
The other courses, all of the resources are found on the internet. We don't have hardback text there. And then the last two courses that I'll talk about are courses that are for our students that have IEPs. One is a Foundations of Literacy course, and one is a Foundations of Math course. And these courses are designed to be able to target the specially designed instruction on those students' individualized education plans. In the math course, looking at basic math skills, math computation, solving problems, measurement skills, basic algebra. And then in the Foundations of Literacy course, looking at things like decoding, comprehension, fluency, speaking, and listening. Really looking at, like in the math course, for example, knowing that our students have to take that Keystone Algebra exam, kind of putting another course in sequence that we can get our students that need some more work in the pre-algebra skills, our kids that have IEPs, and the same is true with the literacy, thinking about that Keystone English 10 exam and giving them the foundation they need to be prepared for that as well. Any questions about any of the six courses?
I have a question about the philosophy.
Sure.
So who will be, who's going to teach that?
At this point, it is going to be our high school gifted teacher, Ms. Sharir. What's unique about philosophy is, depending on how the course is designed, you could have somebody with an ELA certification teach it or somebody with a social studies certification. And the approach we're taking with this course is more through works of literature or works of philosophy through the ages. And so since she has an English background and she also serves our gifted students, it made sense as a match. I will also add that we've already begun conversations about finding a way in 18-19 to be able to have one course that can be available for students that have to get the IEPs, and then another one in philosophy that can be available for the rest of our students as well.
And will that content eventually be available for us to review?
I have all of the different essays that are studied in that course. There is a syllabus for the philosophy course. Were they attached to the, no, okay. That's okay.
I just have the PDF philosophy 101.
Okay. I have a syllabus that actually has hot links to all the individual pieces of literature. I can see that all of you get that in PDF format, and then you can review that. I have sample lesson plans for all the courses. All of that is embedded, but I'll make sure that you have that.
I have a couple of questions.
So I wasn't quite clear. How many of these are in the classroom and are online?
The philosophy and the exploring cross-cultural literature, those two are online. The other four are in the classroom.
So when we add a classroom program like these to our curriculum, and then is there anything that we're removing, or is it just going to be what the students select, and it has to be a certain number for them to select it? Do we review? Maybe that's a broader question, but just
no. It's a very good question. So anytime you add an elective course, it just becomes part of the elective offerings, and then Mr. Sanger has a threshold at the high school in terms of how many students we need to have enrolled in a course. To be able to run it. That number is typically a little bit higher if the course is not an advanced placement course. With the AP seminar and the AP computer science, the number is a little bit lower, but no, these wouldn't be courses that would run if we only had one student or two students, but they would be in the catalog and they would be offered every year. I anticipate the AP computer science is going to be one that we'll have high numbers for on a pretty annual basis because the computer programming course really took off, and I think to have that next level is a plus.
Right. But I guess my point being, the more electives you offer, you dilute the pool. And what is the process for where we see maybe there's 2 years in a row or 3 years in a row where we didn't have enough sign-ups to run the course? Do we,
how do we call, I guess would be the word, how do we remove this from the list?
Yeah, I can speak. What Mr. Sang would do is, it would put that on a hold. It would be a not offer. We wouldn't eliminate it right away until we solve. So it might sit dark for a couple of years before we actually do anything with it. The other thing is, with some of the online courses, we do compensate teachers a little bit differently to bring on an electronic course. So there's a couple of ways to do it, but for the most part, we let the market sort of drive what courses stay and which ones don't. You know, for example, I don't know if you caught it, but Mr. Sanger introduced his teachers. We are swapping, for example, a language arts teacher out to drop a tech ed teacher in. That's an even swap, but it reflects a significant change in what we're going to be able to offer kids. We try to keep it staff neutral when we're able to do more of that with the online stuff.
The other thing I would add to that as well is that 4 of the 6 courses either target our students with gifted IEPs or our students that have IEPs, which is a very specific population. And those courses were designed because we saw a need within those particular groups of students.
And I understand the online courses, we can have, you know, more flexibility running those with less, you know, with less students, probably.
Right.
I was just sort of just asking, I guess. And when we get like a new course like that, it comes, I mean, we approve a textbook, and you said there's a syllabus typically.
Correct.
With it. How much do the individual teachers have as far as reworking or how utilizing it, or how, I guess, how much is set like with the curriculum, or is it open, you know, to the teacher to kind of tweak it?
When there's a new course at the high school level, I work with the teacher initially and provide a framework in terms of how the curriculum is supposed to be designed and structured and what kinds of resources we can look at. The teachers have become very good at trying to leverage a lot of the resources that are free and are accessible online. You know, several years back, I'd be bringing new courses to you. There'd be a book for every single one. You know, you can see this evening with the 6.
Right.
You know, the AP Computer Science is the only one that has a hardback textbook with it. The other ones have all online
good
resources.
Pushing for that years ago.
So. Yeah. Right.
But, yeah. So, I guess. Okay. Good. And then the final question here. I may have lost it, but how much you said we kind of have, you know, the students select what they want to take, but how much input is coming from the guidance counselors that they select things that are going to be beneficial if they're going on to college or that much?
I know at the high school level, one of the things Mr. Sanger and Mr. Cox have been really good about focusing on is ensuring that the counselors meet with every single one of their students on an annual basis to make sure that they're looking at credits, that they're looking at college pathway, what careers, that kind of thing. So that guidance is happening, and to the credit of high school administration, that's something they've really emphasized over the past several years.
Okay, great.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Our next topic that we're going to be looking at is the elementary ELA science, social, and social studies elementary curriculum. As part of a lead-in, and I'll be very brief because then I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Frederick. But if you remember, 3 years ago, we asked for permission to participate with IU13 on a literacy audit, and the K-6 portion of that audit has been completed. And in both of those audits and the recommendation came back, and I'm quoting, to provide a robust literacy curriculum, provide clarity on scope and sequence, focus standards, anchor assignments, curriculum embedded assessments, materials and resources for each unit and each grade level. What we have done in the past is we have provided teachers with a list of standards that were put out by the state. There were, on average, 210 academic standards that elementary teachers had to address every year if you looked at every single standard that was out there. So the IU recommended that we provide more of a roadmap for our teachers, not just looking at giving them the standards and then providing them with materials. We provided them with level readers, we provided them with programs. The last time we bought a program for ELA was when Dr. Hitchcock was in my position and it was Reading Street. We still have that and it's still available for teachers. But we also have reading aids and reading A to Z and Achieve 3000 and No Red Ink and My Access, which are all ELA digital materials that we have as well. So Mr. Frederick and Dr. Winters and myself got together and we said, okay, so how are we going to address this? Not only is the literacy curriculum recommended as a need in our audit, but it's also part of our comprehensive plan. And so we sat down and we looked at how we would go about adding modules and curriculum to our elementary English. We asked grade levels to work on the SAS modules, which is part of the voluntary curriculum that the state has put out, to start looking at the materials that they felt would be appropriate for their grade level, the content they felt would be appropriate for their grade level. And we also then started working with a curriculum consultant and to help us make this as robust and rigorous a curriculum as we could. We also decided to add science and social studies, which were pieces that we had not touched for a while, and those standards have changed as well. And we looked finally at our Bright Bites survey, which was, which is a survey we do every 2 years, and it looks at how we are integrating technology into our classroom and providing our students opportunities to use and develop 21st century skills of communication, collaboration, creative thinking, and creativity. Did I say that one? All right. And so what we have here for you to look at is an example of the curriculum that we feel very strongly we need to roll out here in Eastern Lancaster County School District. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Frederick at this time to walk you through what you have in front of you.
Good evening. Thank you for your time. As you can see, there's a binder in front of you, and I'll reference some of those documents. Obviously, I'm not going to touch on every one, but they're there for your review. As Dr. Larkin said, looking at the standards in each of the grade levels, the average number of standards in a grade level is about 200. So you can see, tell that that would be overwhelming for a teacher to try to put those together in a meaningful way with 182 school days to cover them and make sure they are mastered. So it's a tall task. One of the things I wanted to reference for you in the binder is located where the yellow or purple tabs are. So if you could flip to one of those. Typically in our district, at least since 1996, that's how long I've been here. Can't believe it's been that long, but so since 1996, typically what our elementary curriculum looked like was a document that just listed standards and what time of year they should be taught. And that's about the extent of the curriculum. We never really gave a roadmap for teachers or any map of a way that they could use resources to hit some of these standards. Obviously, with 200 standards, they need to be grouped together in ways that they can be taught multiple standards at the same time, or it would be very difficult to cover them all in 1 year. So those that are tabbed there are standard alignments, and typically, like I said, those would be what teachers would work off of. What we're attempting to do in our revised curriculum is to integrate science and social studies into our ELA curriculum. As you may or may not have known, over time, there's been less of a focus on science and social studies and a greater emphasis on English and language arts, which we're trying to remedy and trying to make sure science and social studies get more emphasis in our elementary curriculum. Several reasons for that. Many of the jobs, as you're aware, with STEM initiatives are in those kinds of fields with science. And also science and social studies, a lot of students have passion in those areas and are very interested in those concepts. So what we're attempting to do in this curriculum is to embed our science and social studies in our ELA curriculum, where students are using science and social studies text while they're hitting the ELA standards for reading. So there are a couple of sample documents and modules that are located on the white tabs. I put a document in the front of the binder that shows you the general structure of the modules. It's a visual rather than me trying to explain in words how it's set up. The modules are set up with an anchor activity, which is at the end of the module, a performance task, which students would have to either create a product or some kind of presentation to show that they mastered the standards in that unit for social studies, science, and language arts. Throughout the module, the standards are grouped in segments that are connected to science and social studies through ELA, where ELA, the text used in the ELA curriculum revolves around science and social studies concepts. The curriculum piece, and the piece that's a little bit different from the curriculum that our district has typically had for teachers, is the resources piece. One of the things we're trying to do in this curriculum is provide a menu for teachers with many options or pathways that they can use to get to that performance task or get to the end point. They can also use this menu to customize for students, so there's options to give students choice and voice in the activities that they do to as they're going through and addressing these standards. So looking at the sample modules that you see there, these are two modules. One is a fourth grade module sample, and one is a sixth grade module draft. The first page shows you the type of performance task that each module will have. And as you read over there, you can see that it goes beyond the multiple choice test that we typically associate with an end of unit assessment. And it's more based on a performance task where a student takes their learning and produces a product or a performance or some type of presentation demonstrating mastery of the standards. Some of the shifts that you'll see in the curriculum, again, I mentioned a little bit earlier, you'll see a greater emphasis on science and social studies through texts that students read and some of the activities that they do. Each day there's a science inquiry piece where students participate in either science or social studies hands-on or a minds-on task where they're discussing and applying higher level thinking to the content that they learned in ELA. Another emphasis, and Dr. Larkin noted it at the beginning, is an emphasis on the four C's, such as collaboration, creativity, critical thinking, and communication. One of the things that you'll notice that typically has been missing, or maybe not missing, but not emphasized in our current curriculum, is the idea of speaking and listening. A lot of the tasks that you'll see in here that students will be engaged in will be revolving around communication with the other students as well as the teacher and presentation and material. Another piece that you might notice that may be different from our typical curriculum is that many of the resources are linked within the document to online resources, both free and ones that the district has purchased for various grade levels. So that the links are there for the teacher, they won't need to be looking for them or spending time planning on finding resources, but rather can spend more time planning for the students that are in front of them. And finally, one of the other emphases that we're trying to accomplish with this curriculum is the whole idea of higher level thinking, where students are involved in evaluating text as well as application of the skills that they learn, not just recalling facts that they've learned, but actually applying them to some sort of task. And Dr. Larkin can talk to you about some next steps going forward. If you have any questions, I know it's a large document, but that's the general framework for the curriculum documents.
Just have a question, since there's no key. So some of the topics have a P, and some of them have an X, and some of them are blank, and some of them are highlighted.
Right, yeah, these are drafts. The P's indicate that they're priority standards. So what we're attempting to do that we haven't done before is identifying those standards which SAS or PDE has identified as important standards, but we feel that more time should be placed on those than some of the other ones. So they're higher priority standards. The X just means that those standards will be touched in those modules in some way, not necessarily a priority, but they will be addressed. The ones that are missing yet are not yet embedded into the modules. Some of them were missing in our current curriculum, so we are working on integrating those in the new curriculum.
And what about the ones that are highlighted?
Again, the highlighted ones are ones that we have to include going forward in our final drafts of the curriculum that are not currently addressed. We did find there were quite a few standards that were missing and or not updated. The most current PA standards for science and social studies were 2012, and our current science and social studies curriculum was written in 2007. So there are some things that have been moved around and some additional standards added for those areas that we'll need to address.
So this kind of piggybacks on the question I asked earlier about the curriculum at the high school. So this is before, like, did we not have consistency between the different elementary schools as far as the curriculum that would be taught?
Right, the consistency between the schools was with the standards, but not a clear roadmap of how you might reach those. So that's where you'll see more consistency in these documents, as there's outline materials, whereas in previous curriculum, the materials weren't necessarily identified, or instructional strategies weren't identified, and that's what we're attempting to do here.
It still allows the teachers some latitude as how they implement it.
Correct, there's a menu of choices.
At least there's a more consistent, I would imagine like the middle school, you would see that where if students are coming from different elementary schools.
Correct.
And have that different, to try to bring that together, I would think would be like
that's what we're attempting to do,
right,
to align it vertically.
And I like that it seems to be a lot more critical thinking than just, like you said, just the standard memorization and recalling it for the test.
So we're attempting to include a lot of application of those standards.
Just a couple comments if you guys want to think about a few more questions for Greg. He loves standing in front of that microphone.
As long as he's talking about data, he loves
it. I mean, I had a couple numbers here.
Yeah, right.
Please, Dr. Hollis, let me make a presentation before the end of the school. A couple of things. One of the challenges that we're trying to solve is, number one, the last statistic I heard, it would take between 22 and 23 years to teach all the standards. Years, not until they're 21, 22. That's how many years it would take to teach every standard that Pennsylvania has. So by prioritizing, we're doing that and making sure that students who are not going to read all those standards, hit every one of those standards, at least have the most important ones in their pocket so they can move on, and so that there is some consistency when students get up to the secondary campus. The second challenge that elementary teachers will tell you they have, and we have one here, is they're measured by their language arts and their math scores. And it's a very natural and understandable tendency to, when the day's running short on time, to put social studies and geography and science on the back burner. Completely understandable. Not a good thing, but completely understandable. This will make it easier for teachers in those subjects to deliver that service to students. I know the school district where I'm very frustrated with some of that in terms of how that happens at the elementary level with worksheets that really don't mean a whole lot, no thinking at all. So I applaud the efforts of Dr. Larkin's team. This is a huge evolutionary step forward. Again, it's not saying everything was bad before, but we continue to grow, we continuously try and improve, and this is what this represents.
Just a quick question on this. Now that I think I understand the layout of it, which isn't a lot that you guys have to do, is there ever like feedback on this? Like, are teachers, how do we know these work?
Yep, so what we're attempting to do as well is after each module, there's going to be a teacher feedback survey. And what we want to do is kind of make these living documents rather than waiting 10 years to update them again. So what we want to do is collect feedback from teachers on what went well, what resources were good resources, which ones need to be vetted a little bit more, as well as also giving teachers opportunities to add resources to this document, because it's not a complete list of everything that's out there. It's just three choices, generally, of what they could use. But we also want to get teachers feedback about other resources that they might have that could be included in this document as well. So we plan on doing surveys after each module to get that feedback and make changes as needed going forward.
How were these support documents done?
The support documents in the menus. Typically, most of the items that you see there are district resources. You will see some that go out to different documents, like there's one in there that goes to the references the Constitution, things like that are free resources online. I don't know if that answers your question.
Are the documents supported by peer review? Or?
I can't say that they were all peer reviewed. The links that are in there are links that we've looked at, but I can't say that they've been reviewed as far as vetted by multiple groups. Or
we have, like Newzella and Achieve 3000, there are articles in the curriculum with those. Those are all vetted by research people at those companies. So they're not fake news, and they're also well-established sources. We're not just going and using at this point anyway some free pieces of materials that are out there that we don't know come from a reliable source. One of the things that Mr. Frederick talked about was that we are going to have a system in place for teachers to provide new resources. We are working to set up a strong vetting system so that we can start looking at anything that would be in addition to this, how we're going to make sure it's a strong research-based article or source. So we're putting that in place as well.
I appreciate the concept of the roadmap. I mean, that makes sense to me, and this is a place to start, and I appreciate that obviously there will be changes here, but just to give teachers, I mean, we were discussing whether teachers would feel like they were micromanaged, but, you know, I think it gives them some options, and it gives them just like a roadmap, like we're trying to all get here, and you can have some variation according to your skill set or your interests, but this is, I would think a teacher would appreciate this as a resource. So,
thanks. Right. So typically the performance task would be something that is required for the unit, but then how they get there,
right.
There's options there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And it's a lot of information. I mean, the number of standards is overwhelming even to hear it. You know, so if this helps group them in a logical way, I appreciate that.
That I agree with what Jenny just said, because I've heard from a number of teachers that, and I know it's probably be maybe over-exaggerated, but the lack of a curriculum like bothers them, and that this seems like this is a really great place for them to be and start and go with, and I think it's great that they're incorporating science and social studies and stuff, which arts, it needs to be there. As a scientist, I think
correct.
Getting science out of there is a bad thing.
Yeah, and I didn't include health in there. Health is also in there as well, which is kind of part of the science.
Going forward, assuming that from next month you say yes, continue and go forward, we have set up times for this summer to train the teachers with support. We also have the coaches that are going to be trained and walk alongside the teachers throughout the next school year and on to help them work through the kinks of the new curriculum. And then we're also training the administrators, us included, to make sure that we know what's in the curriculum so that when we are doing walkthroughs and observations, we can actually make sure we're giving them strong, you know, curriculum information and support. I think one of the things that I just want to reemphasize is what Mr. Frederick said about having surveys at the end of each module to get feedback from teachers. Also, there's going to be a survey that the students are going to complete as well, so we can get their feedback. And finally, I'm going to kind of point to Mr. Martin here, who actually helped solidify this for me. He told me recently when I was meeting with him that it shouldn't depend on which teacher you get what the curriculum is that you're going to receive and the education that you're going to receive. And I buy that and believe that 100%. I think this curriculum will help make sure that every student at the elementary level in Eastern Lancaster County School District gets a very strong 21st century education.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a chance to look over that? My computer's.
You can contact me anytime you want to about any of those, and I'll either answer it or say, Mr. Frederick.
Put us in the right direction. My battery died here, so I don't have the agenda. I'll make the chat.
So that ends my report.
Thank you. Any other questions on the program? Oh, okay. He printed it out. All right, I had it before. Management Committee, Dr. House.
Thank you, Mr. President. We just have a couple of items. One of them, we already discussed, Mrs. Heather Francis has been approved. We do need an action item next week, for Mr. Justin Johnson to continue on as Secretary of the Board. If you recall, he came in partway through a term. It's a four-year term, so that is letter B on the action item for next week. Information on update on the pension reform bill. Good news is the governor did sign it today, last I heard. Without getting into the details, because you would trip me up very quickly if you started asking my questions about that, I'll just tell you up front. There really is essentially three different plans that have a combination of percentages related to direct contributions and direct benefits. And that's really all we need to know at this point. I can try to answer questions, but again, it's a combination of different percentages depending on what plan. The hybrid plan is the default, which is a combination of both direct contribution and direct benefit. The changes go into effect not until July 1st, 2019. The effects will be felt probably 30 years from now, long after any of us are still a part of this organization, I would assume. But having said that, it's a long-term step to change the trajectory of what is a system that's really draining the life out of our economy in this state. So our hope is, my personal hope is that take a bite, maybe take another bite in another couple of years and do a little bit more. But this is a start. This is a huge start, actually, because we've been talking pension reform ever since I've been superintendent 9 years ago. So it is finally on the agenda and everyone's agreeing. So The last thing I have is just an update. We talked a little bit about this as well. Carnarvon sale was sort of reviewed and approved by the county commissioners. Not that they have direct authority to say no, but they do like to know what's going on. They reviewed it. So we're moving forward. We're developing an agreement of sale. We have the sale price that we've all agreed to. So I expect that will get passed back and forth a few times before we're close, although we're already close now. And Mr. Yoder is handling that with Carnarvon Township. So my assumption is that we'll have an agreement in July, probably approved in August. And that's all I have for my report. We do have, well, just a few announcements. Graduation was awesome last Friday night. Congratulations to everyone who was a part of that. That's every teacher at every grade level, every support staff member, my administrators, and of course the board who supports all of that. A number of you were there. It was really a fantastic night. I get so many compliments for our graduation, just being the right side, the right length, the right number of speeches, the right chemistry. So I don't foresee us changing that much at all going forward. I love that the students read the names. I just think the whole night really works really well. So that was awesome. Board meeting next week, and then just a reminder to the folks here, we only have one board meeting in July. The last announcement I have is we do have a need for an executive session for a personnel matter that is the superintendent's evaluation. That concludes my report.
All right, thank you. Dr. Hollister, any other questions on the management committee? Any other announcements for the board? All right. Then, hearing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And a second. All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no?
Aye.
We are adjourned.
Thank you all for hanging with us all night. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam.
We really don't have an audience very well.